The rusting remnants of America's first great amusement park provide the setting of a new graphic novel that has its start in Coney Island, but comes to range over continents and centuries. Luna Park tells the story of a deserter from the Russian army who washes ashore in Brooklyn and how his experiences in Chechnya find echoes in America. The writer is Kevin Baker, best known for Dreamland and other novels about New York City. If you've read Luna Park or if you'd like to talk with him about novels and graphic novels, our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also see some images from the novel on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Kevin Baker joins us from our bureau in New York. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
And this is your first graphic novel. You've written several historical novels, as we've mentioned before. Why switch to this form?
I think it's a way to tell an unusual sort of story, a kind of offbeat story, a story with a couple of twists and turns in a almost Twilight Zone-like way that I think works much better in a graphic novel than in a straight novel.
I've read that, in fact, you approached Vertigo, the publishers, with an idea of your own, and they said, well, I'm not so sure, and then steered you toward this.
Well, actually, they had approached me about doing something, and I came up with an idea for sort of a 19th century superhero. And they thought, as you said, they kind of wanted something more about Coney Island, which I'd written about before
in
my
Dreamland,
novel,
yeah.
Dreamland.
Yeah.
So, and you know, there's a million stories out there. It's a very interesting old place, you know, kind of on the edge of America where the difference between what's real and what's imagined keeps sort of slipping away. So I worked something out and ran it by them, and they said, great, and here we are.
Of course, in a graphic novel, the writer does not get to tell the story alone.
Right, exactly. I think the person who really made this come to life was Daniel Jaeger, who is the artist on it. And I very much wanted him to kind of lead on this because he's, first of all, a terrific artist and a terrific, you know, comic book artist. And
those who read the monthly Northlanders have seen his work with Brian Wood.
Yeah, and several other things as well. And he's, you know, he's just terrific and also had much more experience in this than I did. And it is basically it's a visual medium. So I really wanted him to kind of take it and lead on it. To him whenever kind of, yep.
Well, when you say he did the lead on it, did you have a synopsis and say, how are we going to structure this? How are we going to have these many panels per page? How are we going to do it?
No, in the sense that I wrote the script first that included all that.
Uh-huh.
But, of course, it's one thing to write a script out and have it on the page, and then another thing to kind of give it to the artist and have him make that come true. And again, he improved on what I had written there and really made it work on the page.
And brought the characters to life. Did they look as he drew them the way you had envisioned them?
Yeah, pretty much, you know, with a little bit of a difference, but interesting differences, too. I think he actually made them kind of more human and more three-dimensional just through the drawings.
The place is a metaphor. It is also a real place. Luna Park was a part of Coney Island, and, of course, it's an interesting turn of phrase. At one point, I think you referred to it was the place where they manufactured fun.
Yes, that was the phrase that Frederick Thompson, the guy who designed it originally back at the start of the 20th century, had. It was a place where he felt Americans in this big manufacturing economy, they needed to have a place of manufactured fun. And what he came up with was something absolutely incredible, the most beautiful, most interesting, most bizarre amusement park ever built.
And shiny and bright and glorious on the outside, yet almost from the beginning had a rather seamier inside. And of course, now in its last days, in fact, it's being torn down now. It's rather bleak.
Yeah, and it's what's kind of really going on in Coney Island. Luna Park itself was actually burned down in 1946, but there, you know, it was replaced as all the great parks out there were by kind of a fun honky tonk park, Astroland. And now, unfortunately, that's been removed. And, you know, Coney Island is kind of being destroyed by developers and by the city of New York. And that's reflected in the novel. Only here I throw in as well a couple of Russian mobs who are fighting over the carcass.
And your protagonist, I'm not going to call him hero, but the protagonist of the story finds himself working for the lesser of the two mobs.
Yes, he's a starke for the lesser of the mobs. And, you know, that mob clearly seems to be on the way out. They're facing a very formidable opponent and the other mob. And he's not very good at this job anyway. He hates intimidating people over paying gambling debts and that sort of thing. So it's looking pretty bad for him.
And at the same time, he is in recovery, if that's, I guess, the word, from some of his disastrous experiences during the Chechen War, and finds himself putting himself almost in the same situation.
Exactly. In a way, this is sort of an homage to Chinatown, or maybe Malamud's novel of The Natural, you know, where people learn nothing from experience. He's fallen in love with this rather mysterious fortune teller named Marina, who works for the other mob, and the two of them think they're going to pull off something that will help them escape from Coney Island and from their situation. And in fact, he ends up right back in the middle of another disaster, only this one with a twist.
And a disaster that, his efforts to escape the situation in Chechnya didn't work out so well either.
Right.
And indeed, this all ties to not only Russian history, but Russia's history with America.
Yeah, and he goes right back into this through a funhouse that takes him back in time. This is what struck me as interesting about this was kind of the collision of these cultures. You know, American history is sort of a history where everything works out, or at least that's what we tell ourselves, even if we have to white out the parts that
like,
don't.
Like in the movie The Natural, as opposed to the novel.
Exactly. That's so typically American, where you can get the cash and the girl. You get to hit the home run and be and of course, Russian history is sort of the absolute polar opposite. Nothing works out, and the same mistakes keep getting made again and again and again. So, you know, here's my take kind of on the collision of the two of these and what happens from that.
Now, let's get some callers into the conversation. We're talking with Kevin Baker about his new graphic novel, Luna Park. He's the writer. The artist is Daniel Gégé. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. And 800-989-8255 is our phone number. Email us talk@npr.org. And Jennifer's on the line calling from Minneapolis.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm really intrigued how you decided to go ahead and create the story and have someone else illustrate it. Most of the graphic novels I'm familiar with, I grew up with Craig Thompson, and I love his works. And it just seems to me, how did you come to the medium of the graphic novel if you are from the writing side rather than the art creation side?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I generally think in pretty visual terms when I'm writing. You know, I'm picturing stuff a lot, you know. It felt kind of natural in that way. And of course, easier for me because I can sort of really struggling over those descriptions. I can just say, here, you do this. So it did seem like something fairly natural in that sense.
Okay. So the collaboration was you gave him the things you had in your head. And
right.
He was able to draw them out and you worked back and forth?
Exactly. You know, it worked. I had it in my head. I wrote out the script, you know, got it off to him. And, you know, there were occasionally things where I'd say, no, this needs to be something else. But for the most part, I really was, you know, blown away by the work he was doing. And he would improve on stuff. You know, at one point I have the hero referring to going up Ocean Parkway, which is this beautiful boulevard that comes off Coney Island, and watching these kind of Orthodox families at the end of the Sabbath strolling along there, which is a very beautiful thing you do see along there. And he I'm not sure if he misunderstood it or what, but he put them actually at the ocean, you know, this kind of Orthodox family sort of looking at the ocean along Coney Island in the sand. And it was great. It worked perfectly. So I went with it, and there was a lot of that.
Hmm.
Interesting. So I'm curious, how long did the whole process take?
Surprisingly fast. You know, I think all in all, something like 4 months.
Wow.
So it really
wow.
went... It really went pretty quickly. I might, you know, I might be making that scene. It probably felt shorter than it was. Maybe it was 6 months, but it was not a long time. You know, it was something that really flowed.
And this is how many pages? I'm just 160 pages. I mean, this is not one of your skimpy little graphic novels.
Oh well, you should see the regular novels I write, the ones where no one's helping me. They're quite long.
I know that. Jennifer, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye bye. And what's happening with your 19th century superhero? Are we going to still see Industrial Revolution Man?
It's quite a convoluted story. I mean, I pitched that to them. Maybe someday we'll do that. I have another story I pitched now to Vertigo, which is more something in, you know, kind of the 1950s in the Bronx. So so we'll see if that gets made. I would love to keep working in this medium. It's been terrific fun.
And I read an interview with you. You were not a reader of, you know, one of those guys who squirreled back issues of Black Hawk under their mattress as a kid.
No, I grew up in kind of the, was it Frederick Wertheim? Was that the name of the
yes.
the big scourge of comics who felt they were terrible for kids? And I think my parents bought into that. So I would read like the occasional, you know, the Classics Illustrated or occasionally some other kid's comic if I could get it. And it interested me, but it was not a big obsession, you know. And then when I was doing some research on Stryver's Row, which is the last, you know, kind of non-picture-driven novel I wrote.
The third one in your trilogy.
The third one in the City of Fire trilogy. And it had a lot about young Malcolm X being up in Harlem in the 1940s, you know, as a young street hustler. And true story, he was an inveterate comics reader. So I researched some of the comics of that time for that book, and kind of that kind of got me into it a little bit. But I really didn't have a great background on it.
What kind of comics did Malcolm X like?
Oh, kind of your basic adventure comics of the time, different superheroes of the period. And, you know, it's interesting the conjunction kind of like how these heroes played into sorts of the, you know, the villains that the Nation of Islam had. You know, and it's not that Malcolm came up with them, but, you know, it really struck me. For instance, there's, you know, Dr. Yaqub, the big head scientist, is the chief villain of the Nation of Islam. He's the guy who invented the white race and helped it prosper through technology. And he, you know, in the 1930s and 40s, comics were full of big, bald-headed villains. Everybody from, you know, Lex Luthor on, you know, who were... you know, who are committing all kinds of doing all kinds of terrible things in their secret laboratories.
So. We're talking with Kevin Baker, his new graphic novel, Luna Park. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller in. Melissa with us from East Freetown in Massachusetts.
Hi, Neil, and hi, Kevin. It's really great to hear Talk of the Nation covering graphic novels because it's a medium that hasn't really reached like wide acclaim yet. People still kind of look down on graphic novels and comics as a whole, so it's really nice to have a segment on it.
Well, we had Art Crumb on a little while ago, and perhaps that's the reason why.
Yeah, I think
I'm
that's
sorry?
I was just making a little joke there, but that's all right.
I just would like to know who your inspirations, you kind of covered it just now, but who your inspirations as authors and artists as far as comics and graphic novels were as a kid and now as an adult, how have your tastes changed? I'm a big fan of Vertigo, so I was wondering if you followed them or DC as, you know, kind of a loyal fan to them or Marvel or what have you.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Melissa, you say that too. I think actually graphic novels are really hot now. You know, I mean, I'll be out someplace and somebody will ask me what I do and I say, well, I write novels, and I see their eyes kind of glaze over and then I say, but I have this graphic novel coming out, and they just, boy, they pop open again. When I went to do this, Vertigo gave me all kinds of things from their stuff to read, and I was blown away by all of it, everything from Hell to League of Extraordinary Gentlemen to a recent release, Incognito. You know, I'm blanking right now on the particular authors or the...
Alan Moore and Ed Brubaker, I believe.
Yeah, okay, great.
Love Alan Moore.
yeah, I mean, but they all impressed me a great deal. And, you know, it's a terrific, fun medium to get into.
Did they give you a template? This is how you write? I mean, Alex enters room or panel one shows Alex right. sitting in a chair, you know, something like that?
No, they just basically, they gave me, and again, I'm blanking on which one it was, but they gave me the original script from one, and they gave me these, you know, copies of some of the best work they've done, and I took it from there. And I think there's probably no better way to learn.
Now, your Industrial Revolution hero, is that going to be along the lines of...
I made that up.
Oh, it's a kind of Gangs of New York hero was more the idea. You know,
oh, with that's cool.
Oh, the dead rabbits live again.
It's a 19th century hero, as might be imagined by Edgar Allan Poe. We'll put it that way.
Interesting, because I'm always looking for new steampunk titles to get my hands on.
Yes, steampunk is great fun.
Melissa,
thank you you so much.
Thanks very much for the
call.
We appreciate it. Let me ask you another part. I think people will understand. You wrote three historical novels about the city of New York.
Yeah.
You've lived there a long time and done a lot of research. What about the Russian part? Where did that come from?
That just from a general interest in Russian history. I know people are kind of wondering where that came from. It just happened that I'm no expert in Russian history. I've just read a bunch about it over the years and, got a primer and picked a few words out from it to help. But just my interest in that, and also my interest in Brighton Beach, which is one of the terrific ethnic neighborhoods still left in New York.
Very vibrant,
Very, very vibrant, wonderful place, distinctly ethnic, terrific nightclubs, crazy places. I remember taking a friend to Rasputin's for a bachelor party some years ago, and it's like the show you get there is sort of as if you took all culture in the history of the Western world and put it in a bag and mix it up and throw it. You have like everything from contortionists to chorus girls to then they play some disco and everybody dances. It's great, and it's it struck me as really, a great place to utilize.
There's a place not dissimilar from that in Luna Park. Is that the model?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's where that came from. And, it's terrific. It's just a beautiful a beautiful culture and a beautiful part of the city.
Well, Kevin Baker, we wish you the best of luck with your novels with and without pictures.
Thank you very much.
Kevin Baker's new book is called Luna Park. The artist is Daniel Zheze, and he's also the author of the City of Fire trilogy, Dreamland, Paradise Alley, and Stryver's Row, and he joined us today from our bureau in New York. I'm going to be away in Fort Myers visiting our member station there. I'll be talking to you there from Wednesday. In the meantime, Rebecca Roberts will be here tomorrow with Tony Hendra to talk about George Carlin's autobiography, Last Words. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.